Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
We've talked about a lot of really good real estate books on this show. If you want to see a list of all the books we've talked about, you can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/books. Joining me on the show today is Kevin Moen. Now, Kevin started investing in rental properties in his own backyard. He couldn't find any more cash-flowing property, so he branched out to some other markets, and he's got some creative ways that he's finding these properties. I want to get right into this, but Kevin, why don't you tell us about how you found your first property?
Yeah, that sounds great. So my first property was a triplex in West Seattle, and it was just a year after college that I realized that it would make a lot of sense to buy a property that not only can I add value to over time, but also help me pay the rent. Or I should say the mortgage with rent. And so what I did is I bought a triplex in West Seattle, where I'm located. But as an owner-occupant, I was able to live in one of the units, rent the other two out, and paid a huge percentage of the mortgage to really help me save up money during those years and also learn the business from the inside.
How much did that first property cost?
So this was in 2012, and I have to say my timing was really, really good. I bought that house for $325,000. I think my down payment was a little over $12,000. And since then, the market's really gone up, and I now have actually a line of credit against the property. It's about a $100,000 line of credit, which still gives me some equity. So I'm not quite going to be buying houses like that in West Seattle in 2015. But back then, getting it for $3.5 was a heck of a deal.
Yeah, that's a really good deal. And how much were the rents for the units you were renting out?
Yeah. So it's kind of a unique property. All the units are different. And when I took over, there were long-term tenants that paid $10.50 a month. There was another tenant in the front unit who paid $1,200 a month. And then the unit I was moving into, the old tenant was paying $600. And the way that property is set up is that third unit's actually a separate little house. It's almost a studio, but it's really just a one-bed, one-bath house.
Okay.
And so as soon as I moved out of there, which I did two years later, after doing a lot of improvements and doing some stuff to the kitchen and the yard and adding a fence, I now rent that unit out for $1,225 a month. I rent my unit out for $1,750, and then that back unit with the long-term tenants, they're just paying $1,100 a month, mainly because they've been there over a decade. They're great tenants, and I don't need to jack the rents up on them.
Wow, you've really done a great job of raising those rents. That's awesome.
And the market did a lot of that work itself. I mean, those units just started going up in value a lot after 2012, but also, of course, taking care of the property and just adding some things that I knew would add some value helps with that as well.
And are you cash flow positive on that after you pay your mortgage?
So I'm very, very cash flow positive on that property.
Awesome.
I also always take into account vacancies and repairs as part of my projections, and even with very conservative estimates for those two, I'm cash flowing about $1,200 a month on that particular property.
That is incredible. Great job. How much do you set aside for repairs and vacancies?
For me, it usually depends. Yeah, it depends on the year of the property, if I'm being kind of general. But the other thing that I do is I get into a lot of detail. And for each of my rentals, I set up a repair chart that basically has the useful life of a given appliance, roof, you know, whatever the case may be, even the electrical system. And I have, it's kind of a little bit complex, but it's a little chart that basically when I plug in the year, it changes how many years are left on that and gives me a projected cost based on things like inflation and what the actual cost of a water heater or the roof might be.
Oh, wow.
And so I use that to not just set aside like a given amount every month, but to know this is how much I'm going to need in this year and just kind of taking them on one at a time. So I don't have just a fixed amount. When I'm looking at properties, I usually use 10% of rent as a general rule of thumb. That should be pretty good amount to be able to cover the expenses. But then once I actually own the property, I get a lot more fine-tuned with that.
So you lived in this unit for how long before you?
That one I lived in for two years. The requirement for the FHA loan was one, but it was a great location, a great house. And the only reason I moved out is because I really wanted a home office because I now work completely from home. And that's when I bought my next rental property that I currently live in, which is a very similar situation. I used that same loan because I refinanced my old property, and that's the only way you can really do this. And then now I live in the top unit of a duplex and rent out the downstairs. And so definitely not cash flow positive in that one since it's just a duplex, but the tenants below me pay about $16.25 a month. That helps go a long way towards the mortgage.
That's great. That is really great. And so now you are looking to expand beyond Seattle, right? You're looking at other parts of the country. Why is it? Are there just not enough good deals in your market?
That's a great question. So, you know, there's always good deals if you look hard enough, basically. But the thing that became obvious to me is that, for example, like Ohio or the Midwest, the values of those houses relative to the rents is a way bit more landlord favorable ratio than an area like Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I love Seattle because I think it's going to be a very, very strong market for a long time. It's going to appreciate. And as long as I can cash flow a little bit and not have worries about making mortgage payments, and I want to collect as many properties in Seattle as I can. But if you compare it to an area like, for example, I've got a property in Columbus, Ohio. For us Seattle people, it's hard to even believe that houses can be as cheap as $35,000 or $50,000 when you're talking about a house that's in good condition and is actually rented. So one of the houses I actually own in Columbus, we have for sale right now for $35,000, and it rents for $650 a month.
Wow.
So that ratio compared to an area like Seattle, it's just cash flow king, basically.
How do you know, like, when you're looking at it, at an area that you don't know, maybe a part of Ohio you've never been to, how do you know that you're buying in a good neighborhood or that you're even getting a good price? Like $35,000 sounds like a great price, but how do you know that's a good deal, that maybe you wouldn't be able to pick up that same house for $25,000?
Right. No, that's a great question. So firstly, whenever I'm going into a new market that I'm not as familiar with, I always start with some really basic data that I'll just find online. Things like, is there a growing or diminishing population? You know, following jobs and getting an idea about what the job market's like is one of the most important things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Looking into crime in certain areas. You know, I personally love Trulia.com because they have a really, really nice crime heat map. So some of my other websites that I use, you just plug in the zip code and it'll give you a crime rating, but that's not nearly localized enough for the type of data that I want to get.
Mm-hmm.
So by using Trulia, I can literally see offenses in different areas and know kind of where the pockets of crime are in the good areas and target that way. And the other thing you always want to do is you want to build a team in any area you're going to invest in. And for me, that means having realtors and having boots on the ground, having proper preservation companies and the experts that know the area and just talking to them about it, right? Asking them kind of what direction things are going, what different neighborhoods are like, and getting a good feel that way. So usually I start with just statistics and stuff I can find online relatively quickly. And then when I like an area or get serious about a certain property, kind of dig in a little bit more with building the team or at least calling up some realtors in the area.
Do you basically find a realtor first? Is that the kind of the cornerstone of putting together a good team?
That's definitely a big part of it. They're going to be the ones that a lot of times will be knowing that market very well, street by street, if they're a good, active realtor. Also, of course, you don't want to waste their time. And so for me, the other part of this is I'm not just building my own portfolio in that area, but I'm also expanding. Basically, I have a turnkey rental property, and it's very much in its early stages, but we're growing. And that's one of the things that we want to do is make sure that the agent knows that when we're going to be picking up a property, that we're going to be selling them relatively quickly, and that they'd be the listing agent so they can get compensated for their time.
Now, most realtors aren't really, I guess, experienced in working with investors from what I've found. Most of them are working with people that want to buy a house that are going to live in it. And when someone's looking to live in a house, that they have different requirements than an investor would have. How do you find a realtor that really speaks your language, that is going to understand that you're all about the numbers and kind of get what you're looking for as an investor?
Well, I guess I've got a little cheat code in life for this one. I've got a program that luckily I'm part of a much, much bigger network, which is the only way I can access this. But I've got this software that basically connects realtors and investors. So, for example, if I found a house and I really wanted to know what the local agent would think it was worth or get the lowdown on the market or whatever the case may be, for a fee, I can hire them to go out to the house, do what's called a BPO, which is a broker's price opinion,
mm-hmm.
take pictures, give me feedback on the market and do all that. So, you know, for the average listener to your recording, they're not going to be able to tap into that resource. So, unfortunately, that's just one of my advantages. But one of the recommendations I've heard from other agents would be basically to call some of the top grossing realtors in that market and just talk to them. You know, like you said, not all of them are going to be like-minded. Some of them are just strictly dealing with owner-occupants and people buying homes, so that's probably not the best match for an investor. Mm-hmm. But there are some out there where they specialize in working with investors, or they invest in properties themselves, and that's really the best way to go.
Yeah.
Someone who's actively investing and they know the business.
So say you find a house. Your realtor finds you a house, and that the house is just in bad shape. Before you even buy it, are you getting a home inspection done to get a good feel for what you're buying?
So that's a really good question. And so the other thing we should mention is that when I'm buying properties in the Midwest or outside of my own backyard, what I'm actually doing is buying the mortgage itself, which it's a whole different spin on real estate investing. I'm a note investor, which means I buy non-performing mortgages, which is a way different transaction than your traditional home sale. Mm-hmm. And I bring that up because the properties I bought in Seattle, where I get using FHA loans and buying it more the traditional route, every time I'm getting inspection going through that. But when I'm buying these notes, the risk in my side of the business is that we really can't get inside the house ahead of time. And so we have to do our absolute best to estimate what the interior is going to be like based on the exterior. Or if we get lucky, if it's an REO, we can get inside sometimes. But that's really the whole risk in my business. But the reward is that by buying the mortgage itself, we're picking up these properties extremely cheap relative to even their as-is value. It's just that if a property is completely trashed on the inside or if it needs a complete overhaul, then it might not be a profitable deal. And that's just part of the business.
Okay.
So most of the time, we're getting just the absolute best data we can. But as a note investor, it's not our legal right to enter the property unless it's an REO, which is kind of a different transaction altogether. So there is that amount of risk from what I'm doing, and I'm not getting inside and doing an inspection on all these properties.
Okay.
But again, if it's an REO, then sometimes we'll be able to get an interior inspection, and it's not your traditional home inspection, but we've got to repair for bids, and it's certainly a much, much higher comfort level than just trying to estimate repairs based on the exterior condition.
When you're buying a note, are you buying just the note on one property, or are they coming bundled together where you're getting a whole bunch of them?
So when I personally do it, it's one at a time.
Okay.
That's just because I don't have the volume. Basically, once you get into, if you have like $500,000 that you can invest or that you're raising, you could go to a particular vendor or bank and basically put together what they call a mini pool, which would be several assets, maybe 10, 20, that type of thing. But for me right now, with a little bit more limited capital, we're just buying one-offs and building the business that way. While basically I'm in the point where I'm just proving that my model works, which is a pretty unique model. And once I complete a few more transactions, we'll have what I consider our proof of concept. And at that point, I'll be raising funds and going out to buy bigger amounts of notes that I'll get better deals on from just having that economies of scale.
So with these notes, you're not holding these notes for a long period. You're buying them, you're fixing up the house, and then you're basically flipping it, right?
Basically.
Okay.
So what we're doing is we're taking a large down payment from our investor, the person who's buying the note, the person who's buying the house itself. What they're basically doing is investing in a product which is a turnkey rental property that's paying from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And we take a 50% down payment from them. And for somebody like based out of Seattle, 50% down payment on one of these properties is cheaper than a 20% down payment on a local property. And we'll sell or finance the remaining term, or the remaining amount, I should say. So that allows them to not have to deal with banks. We have no underwriting criteria besides just putting 50% down. And then what we're doing is we're either holding that note that we just originated because we're creating mortgages that way, or we'll just resell that mortgage itself. Since we're in the note business, a lot of times what we'll do is we'll create a 20-year note for one of our investors. They'll cash flow really nice. They'll make about a 15% return on that investment for themselves. And then we'll just sell that note, and that's where our profit is in the deal.
Okay.
So we hold some, and we resell some. It just kind of depends on the deal and the length of the note itself.
Before you sell the property, you're getting the tenant in place. Is the realtor that you're working with, do they also help get the tenants in there, vet the tenants, deal with getting them moved in and getting things up and running? Or do you have like a local property management company?
It's a local property management company.
Okay.
So like, I might be confusing a little bit when I mentioned earlier that we'll talk with you know, realtors and have them list the property. That's more for something where we'll do like an REO, and it's a little bit different of a situation where they can actually get inside and take a look. A lot of the times when we are reaching out to those realtors, we are just simply paying them for the BPO, and then we're kind of done with working with each other. I've got a lot of information from them at that point. They got paid for their time on that, and then we're just going to hire a property management company to source the tenant, and then they will be the actual management company that will take care of that property when my investor buys it.
Okay.
The whole point of the turnkey rental is we're not trying to give our investors another job. Their only job really is to make sure that the funds are coming in each month and that rent's sitting in their bank, and the property management company takes any phone calls of the tenants and toilets, as you hear so many times people griping about. But that's the other thing. One of the questions people ask me all the time is, well, you know, how do you feel about this whole remote thing? You can't go out and just touch the property. And, you know, for me personally, I actually prefer it this way, because what it forces me to do is to work on my business instead of work in my business. And that's one of the fastest ways to kind of grow your portfolio and not consume a bunch of your time. Because if you got a rental property in your backyard, if you get a call from a tenant, you're going to be really tempted to go out there and fix it yourself. And I've spent countless hours working on certain things that really, if I just hired my handyman, he could have it done in an hour for a couple hundred dollars, and it would be better for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the benefits I like about having part of my portfolio or building a rental portfolio away from my backyard, is that really forces me to outsource things, to have a good team in place, and it actually helps me grow even faster because I don't get caught up in the weeds that way.
Yeah, that is great. Well, if somebody is interested in investing with you or buying one of your turnkey rentals, how would they reach you?
Well, the best way is to go to our website, because then they can also learn a little more about how our model works, because it is a little bit unique. Our website, well, my company is called Root Energy Homes, and that's Root like a tree root, R-O-O-T, energy, and then homes, which is plural. So if they go to rootenergyhomes.com, you'll see our website, and there's a lot of different ways they can contact us there. And that's probably the best way, is they could fill out an application for us to contact them and follow up if someone was interested. And even if they just wanted to learn the note business or to just talk about our model and how it works, then that would be a great way to get a hold of us.
I'll go ahead and put your contact information on our show notes page. You can find that at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode45. I really like the idea of buying the note to get into a rental property. I think that's a real creative way to get into a property. A lot of people complain that the market has appreciated so much that it's hard to find good cash flowing properties today. But Kevin, you're finding them by being creative and buying the notes. I also like the idea that we talked about last week with Mike Giorgiani on episode 44 about using wholesalers. I think wholesalers is another great way to find undermarket rental property. So the deals are out there. You just got to be a little bit more creative today to find those deals. Well, thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.